Hi, welcome to Living Story, the podcast that helps you learn, live, and love God's story of grace and yours. I'm Elizabeth Turnage, writer, story coach, and teacher. Please be sure to check out ElizabethTurnage.com for more on living a gospel-centered story. Today we're going to be talking about going in the right direction. Have you ever had this happen to you? Maybe it's happened to you personally, that you ask somebody, how do you get somewhere? And they told you a really easy way to get there. And then something came along and you said, well, maybe I'll follow this way instead. Let me give you a longer example of that. Suppose my friend said, hey, you go from Pensacola to Atlanta all the time. I know you know that route. How do you get there? And I tell her it's really simple. You just go up I-29 to Flemington, and there you'll catch I-65, take I-65 to Montgomery, and there are clear signs to I-85, and you take I-85, and then, you know, you're going to have to figure out where you're going in Atlanta from there. But it's really pretty simple. But let's say somewhere along the way, my friend's on Highway 29, and she sees a sign that says, this way to I-65. But it's not the way I told my friend to go. But she decides, well, maybe this is some new, quicker way, you know, so maybe I should go this way. Maybe Elizabeth really doesn't know, you know, maybe she's forgotten. I mean, she just went there last week, but maybe she's forgotten. I think I'm just going to try this way. And so then my friend takes that road, and it's some little old highway, and it's starting to get dark. And then the next thing she knows, she gets a flat tire, and she's out there, and she's trying to change the tire. But that's really kind of scary because there's nobody there, and she's got to figure it out. She gets her flat tire changed, and then she says, well, now I'm really in a hurry because I'm really late. So she starts driving 70, but she's going 70 and a 35. And the next thing you know, well, there are blue lights. And finally, eventually, she makes it to I-65, but it's taken her 4 hours to get there. And it should take her like an hour and a half. And she's still 200 miles away from Atlanta. Well, I mean, that's not exactly like what happens in this story, but it's kind of like what happens in this story that we're about to read from the Bible. You've got some people who've been given really clear directions about how to get to where they're supposed to be going, except they didn't get those directions from me. They got those directions from God. He's told them very clearly what they're supposed to do, and all of a sudden they get tired of waiting for his plan to come to fruition. And so they decide that they're going to go their own way. And things get really, really messy. So messy that I'm calling the first part of this story Sister Wives of the Ancient Near East, the soap opera of sin. So let me read from Genesis 16, 1 through 6. And in this story, you're familiar with Sarah and Abraham, and you may or may not know that earlier in that story about them in the Bible, there it goes over many chapters, that they're called Sarai and Abram. So just so you understand that. Genesis 16. Now Sarai, Abram's wife, had not been able to bear children for him, but she had an Egyptian servant named Hagar. So Sarai said to Abram, the Lord has prevented me from having children. Go and sleep with my servant. Perhaps I can have children through her. And Abram agreed with Sarai's proposal. So Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar, the Egyptian servant, and gave her to Abram as a wife. This happened 10 years after Abram had settled in the land of Canaan. So Abram had sexual relations with Hagar, and she became pregnant. But when Hagar knew she was pregnant, she began to treat her mistress Sarai with contempt. Then Sarai said to Abram, "This is all your fault. I put my servant into your arms, but now that she's pregnant, she treats me with contempt. The Lord will show who's wrong You are me. Abram replied, Look, she is your servant, so deal with her as you see fit. Then Sarai treated Hagar so harshly that she finally ran away. And we're going to stop in the story right there, and we're going to talk about this dreadful soap opera of sin that happens right here early in the story of the Bible. The true story. This is a true story. These are real people. Let's talk about Sarai. People knew her as the wife of a strange man, Abram, who had been blessed by God. Years ago, the story went, God told Abram, I will make you a great nation. I'm going to give you lots and lots of children. And he meant Abram's children. They had left their home far, far away. They had left their country as God had commanded. They followed his directions, and they were always on the lookout for the promise, always thinking soon enough, Sarah would get pregnant. 10 years they've now waited, and no signs of any baby. Sarah herself was really pretty weary of it all. The promise. We just have to trust God, Abraham told her. Where was that trust when he risked her life by telling Pharaoh she was his sister? That's another story. But that wasn't what hurt Sarai most. It was just so obvious to everyone, except apparently God, that her body wouldn't conceive a child. She's old. She's really old. And she hadn't had, let's put it nicely, the way of women in a long time. There wasn't going to be a baby for her, not now, not ever. So the plan seemed logical enough. Lots of people in their day and age did it. After all, she trusted Hagar. Hagar was her servant. Hagar had probably come to them in that terrible story where Abram tried to pass Sarai off as his wife to the Pharaoh, and he had ended up giving Abram lots of slaves. Hagar had been Sarai's maidservant for many years. Why not let her be Abram's second wife? Then Abram and Hagar could sleep together, and voila, Hagar would get pregnant, and God's plan would be fulfilled. Abram and Sarai would have an heir, because, and that's what we don't understand about this culture very well, but don't think for a second that the second wife or maidservant got to keep that baby. That baby would still belong to Abram and Sarai, according to the way things went in that ancient Near Eastern culture. Well, you can see how this is getting to be a soap opera. The ancient Near Eastern sister wives, right? And we need to pause and say, it's been tough for Sarai. It's been painful. But that doesn't excuse her going off and trying to do things her own way. She's basically saying, I'm tired of following God's directions. I'm tired of waiting on God's plan. And I don't really trust his plan. Her faith fails her here. She doesn't really believe God fully in this moment. What about Abram? Well, Abram reminds us of Adam in the garden. He basically just stands there. Remember when Adam just stands there and listens to Satan talking to Eve? Well, Adam just stands there and listens to his wife's new plan. He doesn't say a word about what a bad idea it is. He doesn't remind her, hey, remember all that God has done for us. Remember how many times he said he will give us a baby. So Abram is really just following his wife's directions. After all, he may have already been thinking the same thing. We don't know. We do know what a man according to the way he's been designed by God, is supposed to do is lead his wife to trust God, to help her to trust God when she is struggling with her faith. But Abram thinks, well, it's been 10 years. Maybe this is God's way of making it happen. So Abram does what Sarai wants, and sure enough, Hagar gets pregnant. Now, verse 4, Hagar looked with contempt upon Sarai. So Hagar is pregnant, and can you just see her? She's marching around. She's kind of maybe rubbing her tummy, patting her tummy, and she's just rolling her eyes and shooting darts at Sarai. That's not going to be pretty. So now Sarai is ticked off, and she goes to Abram. If you know that story, or if you haven't read that story in Genesis 3 recently, go back and read it, and you'll see how many similarities there are in terms of now we're playing the blame game. And so she goes to Abram, and she blames Abram for this, which, although her motivations are all screwed up, she's really right, because Abram never should have let this happen. So she says it's Abram's fault that Hagar is being contemptuous, and tells him he needs to do something about it. Well, Abram, again, just does that thing that the same thing that Adam does. He basically passes. He does not move with strength and mercy into the situation, and that's part of the reason that what happens next happens. So he tells Sarai, verse 6, "Behold, your servant is in your power. Do with her as you please." Well, this isn't pretty. So you've got Sarai, who's jealous and bitter, and Hagar, who's contemptuous and all stuck up, and Abram saying, "Do whatever you want with her." This is a recipe for disaster. And here's what happens. Verse 6, "Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her." The word, the Hebrew word used there for dealt harshly, is abused. Sarah abused Hagar. And biblical scholars say it's really possible that Sarah was trying to cause Hagar to miscarry. These aren't pretty people. Hagar runs away into the desert. She's trying to get home. The place she goes is on the way to Egypt. But that's a suicidal mission. So here's part one of the story, and it shows what a royal mess we get ourselves into when we try to go in our own direction, when we veer way off course from God's plan. We've got three sinful people here, acting like sinful people do. And that things look so broken that it seems impossible to put it back together again. And yet, the good news of the gospel, the hope of the Bible, which begins even here in the beginning of the Bible, the first stories of the Bible, in Genesis, we're told that there is a God who seeks self-serving sinners with his mighty mercy. So let's look at part two of the story, how God moves into this brokenness with hope for renewal. Chapter 16, verse 7. "The angel of the Lord found Hagar beside a spring of water in the wilderness along the road to Shur. The angel said to her, 'Hagar, Sarai's servant, where have you come from and where are you going?' 'I'm running away from my mistress, Sarai,' she replied. The angel of the Lord said to her, 'Return to your mistress and submit to her authority.' Then he added, 'I will give you more descendants than you can count.' And the angel also said, 'You are now pregnant and will give birth to a son. You are to name him Ishmael,' which means 'God hears,' 'for the Lord has heard your cry of distress. This son of yours will be a wild man, as untamed as a wild donkey. He will raise his fist against everyone, and everyone will be against him. Yes, he will live in open hostility against all his relatives. Thereafter, Hagar used another name to refer to the Lord who had spoken to her. She said, "You are the God who sees me." She also said, "Have I truly seen the one who sees me?" So that well was named Beer Lahai Roy, which means well of the living one who sees me. It can still be found between Kadesh and Bered. So Hagar gave Abram a son, and Abram named him Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Ishmael was born. Part two of the story is about the God who sees sinners and responds with compassion. Here is the pregnant Hagar. She's in a desert. Just imagine our yesterday in Pensacola, the heat index in the afternoon, the real feel was 109 degrees. Well, it's hotter than that where Hagar is, and she's pregnant, and she's out in this wilderness with really no means to feed herself or to slake her thirst. And the angel of the Lord, verse 7, the angel of the Lord found Hagar beside a spring of water. So God, and this angel of the Lord is, most biblical scholars believe that it is either God appearing to her or the pre-incarnate Jesus, which means that it's Jesus before he had come to the earth as a baby. So when you hear the angel of the Lord, you need to think, this is God, this is Christ. I'm going to say God found her. Was Hagar looking for God? No, God found her. God was looking for Hagar. And God asked her a question. God asks questions. We always need to pay attention when God asks questions. Remember when God asked Adam, "Where are you?" Because like any good lawyer, God knows the answer to the questions that he asks. He asked Hagar, "Where have you come from and where are you going?" And she answers honestly, "I'm fleeing from my mistress Sarai." And he responds to her, telling her, "Return to your mistress and submit to her." What? This is tough. This doesn't really seem to make any sense. You may be saying, "Hey, you said that God is compassionate. He rescued Hagar. Why is it compassionate to tell her to go back to this woman who has abused her and to this couple who have just used her as an object?" But we have to understand the promise here, because God's command comes with the promise, as all of his commands do. His grace always comes first. And I do want to say, just because I know there have been people who have misread and misinterpreted this story to suggest that people should go back to their abusers, and that is not what this story is teaching. And so when God, when God commands Hagar to go back to Abram and Sarai, he gives her a promise, and it's really an amazing promise. He tells her, verse 10, "I will surely multiply your offspring. You won't even be able to count them." You know when those words have been spoken before? When God spoke to Abram. That's right. Hagar's offspring will be multiplied. God goes on to give her something like an ancient Near Eastern ultrasound. Have any of you had ultrasounds? He tells her, "You will bear a son." That's very important in that culture, that she is giving birth to a son. He tells her his name, Ishmael. That means God has heard you, because the Lord has heard your cry of distress. And he tells Hagar that her descendants will be a people. They won't be slaves anymore. In fact, they will cause hostility for other people. These people caused problems for God's people throughout the rest of history. Sin is not without its consequences, and yet God is redeeming it all. And look at Hagar's response. Hagar didn't know God. Hagar was from Egypt. God was not her God. But after this experience, she says, "You are the God who sees me." And she wonders. She really worships. Have I truly seen the one who sees me? And she returns. Now, one thing that's not really described in the story, but just picture this. Imagine Abram and Sarai when Hagar returns. Imagine how humiliated they are going to feel when she says, yeah, I'm back because God told me to come back. Because she's got to tell them, I'm going to bear a son. And she's got to tell Abram what to name his son, Ishmael. So even in that, she will be protected. God humbled Abram and Sarai and Hagar by his mercy. And here's the thing. God sees you. God hears you. He has a plan for you and a direction for you. He isn't arbitrarily telling us to do things. He knows what he is doing. The question that we want to ask today is, have we seen the God who looks after us? Have you seen the God who looks for you and finds you and hears you and loves you and restores you by giving you his own blessed Son as your Savior? Not just any son, but his beloved, perfectly righteous son. Three applications of the story to us for going in the right direction. The first, how do we get going in the right direction? And the answer is by grace. How do you become a Christian? If you're a Christian, you're a Christian because of God's grace, not because of any efforts or great deeds you have done, not because of obedience or your own faithfulness. The truth is that we are all like every single character in this story. Romans 3:23 says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. And we know our hearts. We sin. And yes, we have been sinned against. God didn't choose me because I was a good girl. He chose us because he loved us. He loved us because he is merciful and compassionate. So the way we get going in the right direction, number one, is by God's grace. Number two, how do we keep going in the right direction? And the answer is faith. How do you continue as a Christian? Remember, Abram and Sarah knew God. How do they continue the story? They needed to continue the same way, the journey, the same way they started the journey, by trusting in God through faith. Every day, we're presented with the question, who are we going to believe? Who are we going to trust? When things get hard, are we going to go our own way? Or, I mean, even when things don't get hard, like the story of my hypothetical friend who just said, I see that sign, I'm going to go that way. Are we going to follow God, believing that he has a good plan? Are we going to pray and seek counsel about the directions we pursue? Or are we just going to follow some random road sign and forget all about God's love for us? That is the question we're answering every day. How do we continue going in the right direction? Only because of His grace, by love. How do we live as Christians? With the same compassion that God showed us. 1 John 4:7-8. Because God first loved us, we love others. The good news of the gospel, the good news of this story, is that God's compassion is bigger, way bigger than our foolishness. God's faithfulness is way bigger than our faithlessness. God is patient and forgiving. He is pursuing us. He's finding us. He sees everything about us, and He loves us, and He forgives us. This is the good news of the gospel. Let us go and live this story and tell this good story to the world. Thanks again for joining us at Living Story today. Be sure to check out more gospel-centered blogs at elizabethturnage.com or follow me on Twitter @ElizTurnage. Thanks again.